2 Kings 10, reading here about Jehu and how he goes around with great zeal, destroying the house of Ahab, how he kills 70 of Ahab's children, or he manipulates things so that they are all beheaded, and he must really take the guilt for that. And of course, a lot of those would have been little boys, I suppose, at this stage. And he says to Jonadab, come and see my zeal for Yahweh. And we get the impression all the way through that this guy is on a bloodlust. He's absolutely crazy. He's not a spiritual person. And he makes a big fuss about killing all the worshippers of Baal and stamping Baal worship out for the time. And yet, God's comment is, but he continued in the sins of Jeroboam. He continued worshipping the golden calves. So sure, he stamps out one aspect of idolatry, but he worships other idols. And we are told that he did not follow Yahweh in his heart. So he goes down as a bad king of Israel. And so Jehu was not a spiritual person, although he apparently did what God wanted him to do. And because of that, God does say that he, in recognition of that, will ensure that Jehu's family continue reigning for the next four generations. It says, verse 30 of chapter 10, because you've done well in doing what is right in my sight, and have done to the house of Ahab all that was in my heart, your sons will sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. And that is what happened. And yet, he was not a spiritual person. But apparently, he did the right thing when it comes to the house of Ahab. But you've got to get the full picture from all the scriptures. And when you go to Hosea chapter 1, you read something very different, a very different take. God says to Hosea about his son, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Well, that is not, in my opinion, in tension with what we read here in 2 Kings 10. What God is saying in Hosea is, I am going to judge Jehu for all that bloodshed. And yet, here in 2 Kings 10, he is apparently commended for it all. And I think the simple answer to this is that what God is saying is that his motives were totally wrong, and therefore I will judge him. But he did the right thing, and in recognition of that, because I'm very sensitive to people doing my will, sure, I will make a note that he did what I wanted to the house of Ahab. And yes, I will give him externally some sort of reward in that his dynasty would go on for four generations. But then you've got to factor in Hosea 1, I'm going to judge him and his family for all that bloodshed. This is no contradiction. This is saying that his motives were wrong, and therefore I will judge him. Now, this is really a parade example of the importance of motive. Motives really do matter. Whatever we do, if our motives are not for God, in fact, we are doing for us, for ourselves. And we may be judged, or will be judged appropriately. Now, that really should shake us all to the core, because when you start off, when you're first baptized, your motives are pretty pure, I think. But as you go on in church life, everything does inevitably become a matter of repetition. You go to church at the same time, you get more and more involved in administration and more involved in the active work of the church that you belong to. And that's quite right. But you've got to keep asking yourself, what are my motives? Is it, in fact, easier for me to turn up on Sunday than not? Because if I don't turn up on Sunday, people are going to say, oh, where's Duncan? Oh, well, you were right, you know. It's easier to go than not go, whether you feel like it or not. And so what are our motives? And this can be the case with resisting temptation. It is better not to have an affair because, that's going to cause so many problems. Okay, I won't do it then. I won't go down that path. It is better to be generous to that particular cause because, well, we have to be seen to be leading by example. So, yes, okay, so sure, yeah, I'll give 100 or 1,000 or whatever it might be to that cause because, well, I suppose it's sort of expected of me. We mustn't do this, we mustn't do that, well, because of the example it might set the children, all this kind of thing. What are your motives? Because if our motives are not ultimately for God and for His will, then we're going to fall into the Jehu syndrome, where you may do it all, you may tick all the boxes, and yet, in fact, you didn't do anything for God at all. So that is quite a challenge. And who can know their own heart? Who can know their own motives? I don't think any of us can to the end. Why do you want to do that mission trip? Is it because your heart is bursting with passion for the people of that cute tropical island or that cute town in Europe or whatever? Or is it because you want to go there anyway for yourself? Just imagine yourself sitting on that beach, sitting in that street cafe, whatever. Paul says in Hebrews that our conscience is cleansed in Christ. And I think one dimension of that is that we can ask Him to cleanse our conscience, because I don't think that it's possible totally by any sort of act of kind of human self-involvement in your own mind to, as it were, press the cleanse button. There isn't a cleanse button, and human motives are so mixed, to unravel them yourself is very difficult, if not, seems to me, impossible. But what you can do is to ask Him to do this for you, and I urge you to do that.